bulbs flaunting flavors. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 152, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your flock of flame-throwing flamingos flabbergasted by flautas and flan.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm very hungry after that.
Yeah.
But mostly I'm Chris. Dip the flauta right in the flan. It's like the fries in the milkshake.
It actually is very
analogous. It's very similar.
It just blew my mind.
A custardito or something.
Custardito.
Yep.
And today's show is brought to you by our spiffy, spectacular sponsor, Audible, the destination for audiobooks. If you love listening to podcasts, maybe you'll enjoy listening to an audiobook. I know Colin here, you've listened to all of Game of Thrones.
I have,
So far.
Yes, everything that's available.
Yes. Right? In addition to Game of Thrones, Audible houses over 150,000 audiobooks. And you can find some of our own Audible picks and our favorite fact-filled titles on our site. We have quite the range, and that's under Brainiac's Book Club. And if you're new to the world of audiobooks, you can totally get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/goodjobbrain. Make it a long one. Make it a big, long one. Yeah. I have a quick shout-out. This is from Josh, his fiance Nicole. Nicole was the one who wrote in and requested a comic book theme quiz that birthed X-Men House.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
That was a long time ago.
That was
like
a while ago.
2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they are a couple days away from their wedding. And I just want to give a cool shout out.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yep, Josh and Nicole. And all right, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hot shot. And you guys have your Barnyard buzzers. They're back.
Yeah.
All right. Random card. Here we go.
Here we go.
Whoa. Random Trivial Pursuit.
Not
Many different types of Trivial Pursuit cards. We don't know what's going to come out. Truly random.
90s.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
90s Trivial Pursuit card. Here we go.
I keep hoping for Baby Boomer, but
no.
Or Star Wars.
Or Star Wars.
No.
No. All right. 90s. Here we go. Blue Wedge. Who was the only cast member of The Larry Sanders Show to cop an Emmy? Colin. I've never watched the show, so I'm
It's a good show.
Was that Jeffrey Tambor?
Incorrect.
I have no idea. It's not Gary or Larry Sanders.
Yeah, maybe we should all guess Gary Shandling just because.
No.
Oh,
it's.
I won't take a second bite. But.
No, please do.
Was it Rip Torn?
Rip Torn.
Oh.
Rip Torn.
He's great. He's great.
Oh my God, he's a. If you can dodge a wrench, you can.
Yeah.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Yeah.
That's
and
him.
Well, he's also Jack's boss at GE on 30 Rock.
Yeah, he's like in everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Pink Wedge. Who was hit with a $9 million lawsuit for backing out of a deal to play an armless, legless woman in Boxing Helena?
Oh.
Which is a movie.
Yes.
Yeah, who was
it? I guess about an armless, legless woman.
All right, this is a guess. Was it Kim Basinger?
Kim Basinger,
Correct.
Yes.
And it was Sherilyn Fenn, I think, took the role.
Was it really armless and legless?
She was. It was. It was a strange movie. It was a weird movie. Yeah.
Okay,
Art Garfunkel was in that as well.
Really?
Yes.
Wait, the musician?
Yes.
Yeah. Yellow Wedge, who became Britain's longest continuously serving prime minister of the 20th century? Chris.
Margaret Thatcher?
Correct! Okay. Margaret Thatcher.
The
90s. Iron Lady.
The 90s.
Purple Wedge, what hip-hop term do some flyboys trace back to, quote, physically attractive or, quote, pretty hips and thighs?
Fats.
Yes!
Oh,
with the
pH. Yeah. Physically attractive,
hips
pretty hips and
thighs.
Those are backronyms.
Oh!
Yeah.
Green Wedge, what NBA team won 72 out of 82 games in the 1995-96 season?
I'm going to let you guys answer that.
Wait. Okay.
The Bulls.
Correct!
Yeah.
Chicago Bulls. Yeah, this is 90s in basketball.
90s
That's
basketball.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin.
He wasn't playing baseball. Let's just put that one. <Yeah. laughs>
That is still the record, by the way. Best record in a season.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
72-10.
All right, last question of our 90s card. What giant internet outfit scooped up Netscape in a bid to corner the browser market? wow, 90s. Dana.
Yahoo?
Incorrect. No.
What Netscape?
What giant internet outfit scooped up Netscape?
Scooped up?
Scooped up Netscape.
Oh, is that a clue?
Not Mozilla? No. Mozilla was the...
I believe it's AOL.
Correct. Oh. America Online.
America. Giant internet outfit. They did have
those. Wow. Those are some words I haven't heard in a really long time.
90s.
Good job, brain. The 19 years. So today's episode, I usually talk about what inspired me to pick the topic. This was weird. I had a dream. And I had a dream about we were recording and I made a quiz pairing up actors who played presidents and vice presidents. Oh. Like, I would give you the pair.
Whoa.
Okay.
And then you guys guess. Like, I dreamt that. Yeah. And then I was like, I woke up, I was like, that's a good quiz. Yeah. That should be a good episode about leaders, world leaders, leadings.
And did you do the quiz?
I did not write the quiz.
That was a good quiz.
I know. I'll do it next time. That's the ironic thing. I got as far as Harrison Ford and Glenn Close. Uh-huh. And then that was like it. And then I was like, no, I'm going to talk about something else. But so today's episode is not only on world leaders, but also sports leaders leading the pack. And so this week, follow the leader. Never on time, but on point, punctually. Rock the mic globally, reconnect them totally. Follow me, follow me, follow me. I'm the leader. When I march, I'm armed with believers. Follow me, follow me, follow me. I'm the leader. When I march, I'm armed with
As we were coordinating the topics for this episode, Karen, you were like, Colin, you're not going to do a sports topic? So I felt obligated. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the leaders in sports. We call them coaches or managers, at least for the North American pro sports.
Wait, heard of those
terms. What do they call them elsewhere?
So I'm going to start. I have some photos here I'm going to show you guys. And these
Colin, you know this is a podcast.
Dear listener, don't worry.
An audio podcast.
Don't worry.
He's just trying to make us look.
No. This is I'm gonna you guys are gonna sort of talk through the intro to this segment here.
I'm gonna
start by showing you a photo here of this is Coach Tom Landry, legendary coach of the Dallas Cowboys in the 1970s. Yes. Good old Tom Landry, square jaw, hat. That man means business.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the name of the school in King of the Hill.
Yes, Tom Landry Middle School. Oh, right. There you go. All right. And here I have a photo of Coach Pat Riley from his days coaching the Los Angeles Lakers in the Showtime era.
These are tall dudes.
Well, you know, I mean, he was a former basketball player, Pat Riley, he's going to be on the tall side. You know, there's Pat in his trademark Armani suit and slicked back hair.
Wow.
And lastly, I'm going to show you a photo of Joe Torre, famously managed the New York Yankees in the 90s and the 2000s, won some championships along the way. Now, looking at these three photos, I want you guys to sort of talk through what's different among these three photos here. Now, I should say these men are all on the job. This is Joe Torre during a baseball game, Tom Landry during a football game, Pat Riley during a basketball game.
Baseball managers wear the uniform that the players wear. They all sit there in the uniform in the dugout together.
Why is that? Why do baseball managers wear the uniform?
Because Pat Riley and the other dude, they're wearing suits and stuff.
Yeah, and I'll give you a little hint here. It's sort of related to the reason that in Major League Baseball, we call them the manager.
Yeah, not the coach.
As opposed to
I'm guessing that the manager originally was a player on the team.
In the original days of professional baseball and even semi-pro clubs, the person that we now call the manager would have been a player on the team. Mm-hmm. They would have called him usually like captain or, he would have been a player on the team, not just, making the decision of, who's pitching, what's our batting lineup, but also actually getting out on the field and playing when he wasn't in the dugout.
Wow.
Now, there were teams, even going back into the 1800s, baseball teams where the person who made those decisions would not have been a player as well, in which case he would just wear street clothes. Mm-hmm. So it was really only that case of if you're a baseball team and the manager is a player, he wears the uniform. Hmm. Now, it has been years, decades. It has been a long, long time since there has been a team
since
where
the MLB team,
actually had a manager who would play.
But is that possible?
So most teams, it's funny, you know, most pro sports teams these days, it would actually be really complicated because there's collective bargaining agreement rules about contracts. It would be a really easy way around salaries. You could say like, oh no, we're just playing, you know, we're just paying the superstar $5 as a player. We're paying him $30 million to be our coach.
Yeah.
You know, and you could circumvent salary caps and things like that.
Interesting.
It also just makes more sense to just devote all of your effort to have real players 100% focused on playing and have one person 100% focused on running the team.
Are the managers, they tend to be older, right?
They do tend to be older. And, you know, I mean, in most sports, not just in America, in most sports, the coaches and managers tend to have been ex-players. Generally speaking. Yeah, yeah. So why is it manager, you know, as opposed to coach? And in the original days, like, the baseball manager was kind of like a band manager. You're like, this was the person, like, you know, scheduling lineups and, you know, I mean, you gotta go, you know, like, oh yeah, we'll come and travel and play you guys and making arrangements. And that would have been the manager.
Annoying.
It does sound annoying. Okay. All right. So why do we call the person in charge of a basketball, football team? Why is it coach? What's the origin of coach? Coach, yeah.
Like a coach car?
It is related to the stagecoach and the coach or traveling coach. Yeah. Oh. I looked into this, and apparently the word coach first arose on, like, university campuses, meaning, like, a tutor, essentially. You would have a private tutor, and
they'd go along with you to...
The imagery is they're coaching you, meaning they're transporting you. They're carrying you through to success.
That makes sense.
In your academic endeavors.
Huh.
And it you know, you can see pretty quickly how it would leap from like a academic tutor or coach to a sports coach.
Wow.
Yeah, and that I found that really interesting.
That is interesting.
It is kind of poetic. Yeah. So there's always that moment someone watching baseball is like, wait, why is he wearing a uniform? Like I always wish that I don't know, I kinda wish I could see basketball coaches wearing the shorts and the tank top and all that. It would look a little silly.
So every company has a founder or founders, people who establish a company that may go on to do great things. Mm-hmm. And many of those people, when looking for a name for their company, may look only as far as themselves and will name their company after themselves.
Okay.
And so this is a quiz about companies that are named for the founders of that company.
Okay.
There is an overarching there is another thematic thing going on. There is another theme that is beyond the boundaries of the theme that I have just suggested, which is the right.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
That's so a meta theme. There's a meta theme. There's another theme. Okay. So as we're going through, try to there's a pattern. It's a pattern.
Okay.
Sure.
Yes. Buzzing in.
We are buzzing in. This restaurant was opened in Lodi, California, in 1919 by Roy Allen and Frank Wright. Colin.
That's A&W.
That is A&W. Yes. Roy Allen and Frank Wright.
A. Allen Wright.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
California ice cream shops, Burton's Ice Cream and Snowbird Ice Cream, merged in 1953 to form a new ice cream place named after the two founders.
Is it Baskin Robbins?
It is Baskin Robbins.
Oh.
Burt Baskin and Irv Robbins.
Oh, I see. Merged their shops.
Maybe. Maybe you don't. Maybe you do. This guy named his company after himself, and he founded that company after he initially purchased the magazine publisher Vogue. Karen.
Condé Nast?
Condé Nast!
Yes!
Okay.
Yes.
From whom all my paychecks are derived. Yes, Condé Nast. That is a guy. His name was Condé Nast.
Really?
Yeah.
First name Condé?
Condé. First name Condé, last name Nast.
Nast.
Yep. At the end of the movie Hannibal, the title character is seen eating foie gras, purchased at this upscale, very upscale chain of grocery stores, which was initially opened in New York City. Karen.
I've never watched the movie.
Yes.
Dean and DeLuca.
It is Dean and DeLuca. Yes. There were additional hints in there. Yeah. Right.
Well done.
Crafted in such a way that, yes. The founder's name is often dropped when this camera company is mentioned, but it's really in there, or it's supposed to be in there. Colin.
Is it Eastman Kodak?
Eastman yeah. Kodak oh. is still to this day the actual proper name of the company. Yes.
Is it two guys?
No, just mm-hmm. the guy's name is Eastman. He made up the word Kodak.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Is the theme you thought was the theme not the theme?
Not the theme.
The nickname. Check me, Chris. I guess I did. The nickname of this car company's founder was Il Commendatore. Colin.
Il Commendatore. Okay, he's Italian. Ferrari?
Yes.
Okay.
Enzo Ferrari was known as Il Commendatore. This company was named for its founders, Gary Burrell and Min Kao. Gary Burrell and Karen.
KB Toys?
Nope.
Oh, that was a good one, though!
Gary Burrell, GaryBurrell, and Min Kao, MIN space KAO. Yeah, KB Toys would be good.
BK, yes. KB. Not Reebok.
They used their first names.
Oh.
And they made a nice little portmanteau of them.
Garmin?
Garmin.
Whoa! Gary the GPS manufacturer.
That's right, yep.
Whoa!
this company, this founder-named company, which Ken Jennings knows very well, is rather unique in that most of its employees work only 4 months out of the year. Oh, geez. Karen.
H&R Block.
H&R Block.
That's the question that Ken Jennings
went out on.
Yeah.
Yes, that ended his Jeopardy streak. This retail store was founded by a guy named Ingvar Kamprad. Everybody!
IKEA!
Yes, is a acronym of Ingvar Kamprad and the family farm where he was born, Elmtarvid, and a nearby village, Agunarid. Yes.
Sounds accurate. Yes, yeah.
Yes, yes. Very Swedish.
IKEA. Finally, and sticking with names I can't pronounce, James Liaoutaud. L-I-A-U-T-A-U-D? Liaoutaud? James Liaoutaud founded this fast-growing sandwich shop in 1983. Yes, remember?
Jimmy John's?
Jimmy John's,
oh.
Yes. That's James. He doesn't go by James. He goes by Jimmy John.
Oh, that's a sandwich place.
Liaoutaud is a sandwich place.
Yeah. Yeah, they're growing fast.
They are growing fast. Yeah. They are growing fast. So, just as a recap, that's A&W, Baskin-Robbins, Condé Nast, Dean & DeLuca, Eastman Kodak, Ferrari, Garmin, H&R Block, IKEA, and Jimmy John's.
Yep. They're in alphabetical order.
They're in alphabetical order. Okay.
Well done. Well done.
Thanks, thanks, thanks.
Wow, the Garmin one blew me away.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I really like that one. When I saw that one, I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And I think not a lot of first names.
That's elegant.
Yeah.
Not a lot of first names, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Jimmy John's.
Jimmy John's. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's like a nickname. Like, yeah.
Right, right.
Childhood nicknames.
Fast-growing sandwich chain. I was like, Subway?
Yeah, Bob? That's what I was saying. No. I was like, yeah.
Quiznos. Quiznos.
Yeah, it's his name.
Quiznos.
His name James?
Togo's?
James
Togo. Togo. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I go by Togo. Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't prepare the vice president.
You said,
quiz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm real disappointed.
I'll bring it back. So everybody, don't spoil yourself. It wasn't my dreams.
Okay.
I'll come back. So we are recording this podcast right now, the day before Boston Marathon. By the time you're going to hear this, it's going to be a couple of weeks after that. So congrats to whoever wins tomorrow. Congrats to
Lily Sedeza
for winning the Boston Marathon.
Great job. What a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I always knew that
Lily Sedeza
could do it.
Yeah. Just great. Just a lot of running. A lot of moving.
Just 1 foot after the other. I mean.
Yeah. I've been running recreationally for years, but only started racing, like actually attending, registering for races for the last 5 years. So I haven't been a racer for that long. And even though I'm plugged into running more than your usual average bear, I still have a lot to learn. So I would flip through running magazines. And one of the magazines a couple of years ago I flipped through was Runner's World, and they had this article. And I had no idea that this existed, but let me set the scene. New York City, Madison Square Garden, 2011. People in the crowds were basically on their toes right now, watching the fastest two men booking it as they race the final two laps of the Wanamaker Mile. Very climatic, a very big race. And so by that time, there's a guy called Matt Scher. He's just standing inside the track, like, you know, in the oval part inside the track, just kind of watching. He's super sweaty. And the guy next to him, like, is kind of looking at Matt. I was like, why is he puffing? Why is he panting? Why is he sweating? It's almost as if he was running the race they're watching right now. Well, he was. Welcome to the very, very weird world of rabbiting.
What?
A rabbit in the running world is basically a pace setter. When I really boil it down, they're paid to run the first portion of a race and then drop out.
Okay.
They're paid to drop out.
So is like rabbit like in a greyhound race? Is that the illusion?
The illusion, yes. The illusion is in a dog race. They have the little fake rabbit.
Why?
Why? Yes. Why? Why would anybody do this? And why is this good? And why does this practice exist? So basically a rabbit is hired to accurately lead the early part of a race in a very specific time, in a very specific pace. So they're also known as pace setters or pacers. He or she is a visual embodiment of time.
Okay.
That person is running at a steady internal clock, like I need to hit this and this and this. So other runners who are actually competing know
how they're doing.
Yeah.
How they're doing. If they're behind the guy or they're in front of the guy, they can just look and be like, I've been running for 22 minutes. Whatever.
Yes. Right. Okay. Because right now, I mean, you know, a lot of the runners, and even though we have all these fancy gadgets that tell us how fast we're, when you're running a big race like this, you just, you know, you're just running.
Yeah.
So in the recent years, almost every middle distance to long distance, like marathons, all the world records have been made possible because of the help of rabbits. Or pacers. They serve the role as being something tangible on the track. They are not allowed at world championship or Olympic competition. And this is why there are not a lot of world record performances at the Olympics. So if you think about it,
interesting.
The pacemaker is helpful for the runners. They can estimate their effort. They can estimate their time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I should pour it on right now.
Yeah.
Or I'm burning too hot. I need to slow down a little bit.
I need to ease up. And physiologically, it is easier to run from behind than to run in front. A good estimate is that it takes about 15% less effort to run behind somebody. Second of all, of course, is psychologically, it's easier to run from behind. Because you're not the target, you're following a target. You see a target and you're running towards it. The odds of you winning a race if you're leading from start to finish is so slim to none.
Because you're the target, everybody's going after you. But if there's a guy in front of you,
A lot of mental pressure.
I can see that. Yeah, just the psychological pressure of being in first is like, am I running faster than I need to? How close are they? Could I slow down and still stay in first?
What if I'm really in last?
Sometimes that happens in Mario Kart.
Is this the right day? Was the race today?
And then you're in third.
Almost all current world records are made happen in various distances because of pacemakers, because of rabbits.
That makes so much sense.
But, however, you know, as much as they're helpful for athletes to break records, purists argue that hiring these rabbits kind of, you know, takes the competitive nature of running away. Some races hire rabbits, such as Berlin Marathon and London Marathon, and they're usually the marathons that you see world records being broken because they have these rabbits in place. However, New York Marathon and Boston Marathon do not use rabbits. And who hires rabbits? Sometimes it's the runners who want to break the record. Sometimes it's the race. You know, the race would hire rabbits just so to help collectively runners as a whole. But I mean, it really is kind of a tricky issue.
Yeah, it's also good if if you're running a race, if somebody breaks a record at that race, it gets you publicity. So, like, you have
good PR for the race.
Yeah. Good PR for the race is what I mean.
Most of these rabbits are anonymous because they get paid to run a certain amount at a certain amount of time, and then they just walk off.
Are people hiring rabbits to help them out on the sly?
Yeah.
Like, are they're having rabbits.
Like, you're my buddy in the race. Yeah. And I'll just make but it really worth your while.
And then they disappear.
So, this happens. Even if, a lot of races don't allow rabbits, it still happens. Maybe it could be a friend. Or maybe it's a teammate. Maybe at cross-country meets. Actually, that's part of the strategies for a lot of relay runners or for a lot of team runners. One person will rabbit for one day at the meet, and then another teammate will rabbit for another. And it helps the team. Yeah, if a race does not allow it, you have to do it secretly.
So these rabbits, they're world-class runners, though, right? They're running as fast as the people who are about to set a record, or do they enter later?
So rabbits only are in charge for the first part of the race.
So they only have to run for a while.
They only have to run for, like, say, half of a distance, and then they can drop off. So it is possible they have to be good runners to begin with.
Yeah. But they can pour it on.
Yeah, they don't have to exert as much effort because they don't have to finish the race.
Right.
And that is what makes a good rabbit, is they have a good internal clock. Mm. When the race director or what they're hired for, their gig, is to say, you run this amount at this time, at this pace, you do it. There is a guy, Paul Pilkington. He was the designated rabbit at the 1994 Los Angeles Marathon. And he did a good job the year before. And so, the race director contacted him and was like, oh, please rabbit again. So he was paid about $3,000 for rabbiting and an extra $3,000 to hit his time.
Well, extra incentive to do a great job.
Exactly. Yeah. That day was really, really hot. For that race, there weren't a lot of elite runners, like professional runners. So Paul asked the race director, well, there are not a lot of elite runners. What happens if no one follows me? Yeah. And the race director goes, just hit the time that you're supposed to hit. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
They're hired to hit the time.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. And they sometimes have to make decisions on the fly, but usually you just got to hit your time.
You're like a human metronome.
Paul told everybody, like, I want to finish the race, because most rabbits just drop off and they don't finish the race. He's like, oh, I want to finish the race. I'll slow down for the second half after I hit my time. So it was a really, really hot day, and he's running. Paul's taking off, doing a really good time, rabbiting, very, very on track. And he hit the halfway point. No one was near him. So he kept going. And still no one challenged him. He thought maybe, someone will pass me by.
Yeah. Because now he's just sort of doo-doo-doo.
Yeah, he's like, doo-doo-doo, I don't have to run as fast. Right, and,
he hit his time. He made his 3,000 plus 3,000.
And then now he can slow down and enjoy the race and finish. At the 22-mile mark, there was still no one. You're 4 miles away from the finish line. Yeah. And he's like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And then he won. Now.
Yeah.
So the thing is, all the runners know. For some races, all the runners know who is the designated rabbit.
And they knew. He was entered in this race.
Yes, he was entered.
He had a number. He's entered.
Okay, the bib and everything.
They're all official.
Yeah.
A runner from Italy came in 39 seconds later and crossed the finish line. Yes, I won! LA Marathon! No. I'm first place!
No, wait. It was so 39 seconds. Okay, so people were, they were not like super, super far behind.
But 39 That's seconds kind of is a long lot.
39
for,
seconds
for,
is a long time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then it's like, you're silver medal winner. And he was so mad. The Italian runner's like, wait, how come? I thought the rabbit dropped out.
Yeah.
So he wasn't pushing hard.
But he didn't. And it's not like he was pumping it.
Oh,
at
that's
the left.
Interesting.
I do kind of feel bad for the Italian guy. Yeah.
He's like, I maybe would have run harder if I knew the rabbit was ahead of me or something.
Right.
If Paul was the rabbit and he was that far ahead and then he mysteriously dropped out, that's even shadier. He would look like an idiot.
Right.
To be 39 seconds ahead and be like, you know what?
Nah.
Yeah.
Probably way more than 39 seconds because he slowed down a lot after.
Yeah. Good point. Good
exactly.
Point.
And so people are like, wait, what happened to that guy?
Yeah.
So, here's the debate. great for world records, which means Berlin or London for some of these races, which makes for, it makes for boring, race watching.
Hmm.
For the spirit of running, you don't have like, oh, head to head, this runner versus this runner. Mm-hmm. If they're all trying to gun with rabbits to break a world record, the race is actually kind of boring to watch. There is no...
It's almost like all the runners are playing the course instead of racing each other.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's kind of the debate. But...
Huh. Well, what do you think, Karen? You are, I mean, hands down, you are the only serious runner among us. I mean, what do you... Because, like, my take is they're just different. Like, I don't know. I would say, like, yeah, without a rabbit seems maybe more pure, but they're just different. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think hitting world records is a very, very... the hard thing to do, and whatever can help you, that's not cheat. It's not cheating. Yeah, I think I think they are a visual embodiment, you know? Mm-hmm. I think they should get more credit than they're given. These rabbits are mostly anonymous. Nobody even knows they exist, you know, for non-runners. They get paid okay. This is a great job for a lot of former professional runners. They pick up the job as a pacer. They can rabbit for a lot of races, make some money, and they still enjoy running, and they help out other people. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's that bad. I mean, do I really want to see, you know, of course you want to see everybody succeed. That's my take.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of cool being the leader of the pack and then whoop, drop out.
I bet technology, like when VR gets better or augmented reality, it'll be like you have a rabbit the whole time. You're
like
you
a hologram
just
runner.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, oh, there's that person. Okay, I can pass them.
Oh, yeah. Like yeah. Or on the ground, like a track. That
yeah.
Can, yeah.
Well, you can like be like, oh, at this point, I need to be faster. So you program it so it'll start going faster.
Yeah.
Here we go.
That's
yeah.
kind of interesting.
Well, they do that like when they show it on the Olympics. They'll show you, here's the world record timeline. Yeah, but they can't see
it. They can't
see
it.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel like a lot of the sport is their internal clock. Yeah, the rabbits are good, not because like they got all these gadgets. It's because they know exactly this is this pace. This is this pace. Actually, the LA Marathon guy, they usually have a range. At the halfway mark, he was asked to run to the halfway to hit between 1 hour and 5 minutes and 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 15 seconds.
Wow.
His window is 15 seconds to get that extra $3,000.
Wow.
He hit it in 1:05:10.
Yes.
Man.
So that's how good they
that's
are.
Really right. impressive.
Right.
Yeah. That's so crazy. A 15-second window, and he hit it.
Yes.
Wow.
Cool.
I had no idea.
All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
You're listening to Good Job Brain World News. Big breakthroughs this week. Lactose schmactose. The government has finally confirmed that the moon is in fact not made of cheese. And in other science news, the boys in the Audible laboratory have made an ultimate discovery. Top-notch engineers are hard at work creating a new way to read literature without actually reading. Yes, all you cerebral sirs and dexterous damsels can now rest your eyes and listen to books. What's next? Electric cars? Good luck and go get them, boys. Visit audiblepodcast.com/goodjobbrain to experience the future. And this concludes Good Job Brain World News.
You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're following the leader.
All right, I have a grab bag kind of quiz for you guys. These are leaders who also have animals in their names.
Oh.
Are there that many?
I guess.
There are some. It's a grab bag. So it's leaders who have animals in their names or like animals that are related to leaders or ruling or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So leaders, animals, basically.
Yeah, so yeah, okay. The answer will probably...
Animal leaders and leader animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chairman Yeti.
Yeah.
So we'll start off.
Chairman of the boar.
Oh, that's good.
That's not funny.
No.
Don't laugh at that.
I didn't laugh. I said, oh, that's good.
I'm telling our listeners.
Start with some softballs. This San Francisco Giant, or former San Francisco Giant, was known as the Kung Fu Panda. Karen.
Oh, why did I... Pablo Sandoval.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Getting those sports questions.
This is a famous coach and player of a basketball team. Was in prominence in the 90s.
Larry Bird.
Yes. Ah.
Oh, I was going to say Jason Kidd, like the kid of the
Bulls.
That's
spelled wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Is he a coach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
No,
soda.
He coaches the Milwaukee Bucks now.
Oh.
Yeah. Another random
soda trick.
Two inside baseball or inside basketball.
Who was the Teton Dakota Indian chief who united the Sioux tribes? Chris.
Sitting Bull.
Sitting Bull.
Yes. I knew it was.
Dances
it was
with Wolves.
Buffalo or something. Yeah.
This king of England was known as the Lion-Hearted, or the Lionheart. Colin.
That's Richard
the Third.
Okay.
The First.
Okay.
Yes.
Richard the First. Richard the Lionheart.
Yeah. He was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yes.
Who was also in Dances with Wolves. Just bringing it back.
Good job.
Wait, really?
Oh, via Kevin Costner.
Via Kevin Costner. Yeah.
He's a TV producer of the Law and Order series.
Dick Wolf.
Rest his soul. Mm-hmm.
He's dead?
He did. He passed away.
When?
Maybe 2 years ago.
Oh.
Wait, I don't know. He's dead. He's not dead.
What?
He's still alive.
Goodness.
Sorry. There you go. Fact check.
That one. Yeah. So, and he's still alive.
He is, for sure. There's one thing that's for sure. He's alive.
Yes. Still producing quality TV shows.
Many of them.
So many.
All right. This jazz musician was a leading figure in the development of bebop. And this was his nickname. Or his nickname was Bird, or Yardbird.
Charlie Bird Parker.
Yes. Now we'll get into a little bit more grab baggy. Both Scotland and Wales have mythological creatures as their national animals. What are they? Karen.
Griffin?
No.
Oh, dragon.
Yep, one is
Welsh
a dragon.
Welsh is dragon.
Yeah.
And Scott?
Chris? Chimera. Wait, no, Medusa. Medusa?
No, no. It's a unicorn.
What, really? Oh. What, for Wales?
No, for Scotland.
For Scotland?
Yeah.
A unicorn? Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
How do you remember that?
Well, we just know Wales is the dragon.
Yeah, I know Wales.
Yeah, it's the other one.
I just thought it was a griffin.
Yeah, there's a bunch of countries that have mythological creatures as like their national animals.
Hmm. Cool.
Including Portugal, North Korea, Indonesia, Hungary, Greece. Guess what Greece's mythological creature is?
Oh.
Chris.
Batman.
Wait, on their flag?
No, it's their national
their
animal.
Spirit
like,
animal.
Look at their right, spirit yeah. animal.
Oh, it's, is it not Medusa?
She's not an animal.
No,
I mean,
not
Morgan?
Animal. Not an animal.
Oh.
No.
Greece's.
Pegasus.
Oh, that would have been good, but oh. No. It's an, that would have been good.
Greece's.
It's a phoenix.
Oh.
I was like, that's cool.
Sure.
Yeah. Czech Republic also has it, and so does Bhutan.
Huh.
I was like, that's interesting.
It's a cool animal.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, the Albanian flag has a two-headed eagle on it.
Yes.
What does the two-headed eagle mean? What does that stand for?
Oh.
Okay. So, it's like black and red, right? The flag?
Yeah.
And one has an eye and one doesn't. And one is looking to the past and one is looking to the future.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No.
No, sorry. I think that's...
Think about one it them, and, okay. in the context of leadership.
One of them is looking left and the other is looking right.
Yeah.
But they're both the same eagle.
It's a two-headed eagle.
Right.
That's connected.
It encompasses the entire political spectrum in one.
Oh, left and right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
The left wing and the right wing. As a,
oh, like actual wings.
Of Albanian
that's pretty
politics.
Good.
Thank you.
Sounds like a good made-up answer. It's a... Yeah. No.
Vice President and President.
One of them is the eagle of truth, and the other is the eagle of lies.
Equality.
Again, they're the same eagle.
Oh,
it just has
yeah.
two heads.
Okay, yeah.
So one represents...
One head is the head of...
Religion.
Oh.
And one is the head
and one
of
is regular
secular...
Eagle.
Government.
State government. Oh, okay. Having dominion over both the religious and the secular.
That's not separation of church and state.
No.
That's the combination of church and state into one terrifying creature.
Yeah.
It's a common symbol in that area of the world. Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Yeah. Our 10 other answers are equally as interesting.
All of our
added up.
Less correct.
Yeah. They were all 100%. Untrue.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want like a big mouth Billy Bass, but it's a two-headed eagle.
And it's like...
No, it sings
fly
like an eagle.
Hell,
yeah.
Like an eagle.
And then the other head, and the other head, they face each other, and they face away.
They lean out, right?
They lean out. Five, I can
do they still sell these? Yes.
Of course they still sell those.
What am I saying?
Alrighty, Colin, follow the leader. I'm following you, because you're taking us home.
I will.
Well, also, you're a camp counselor. You used to be a camp counselor.
I did.
You're like, very good at leading.
I did. Well, you know, and here's the trick about being the camp counselor. You got to walk backwards a lot.
You do that all the time.
Oh, but not only that, but on like rocky terrain, too. Like on uneven footing.
And always kind of counting.
Constantly counting.
No,
yeah,
seriously.
Make sure.
One of the first times, like, because Colin and I used to work together, we were out to lunch and we're walking, and he is walking backwards. Like,
I caught myself. I was
like this. Yeah. And we're like, what are you doing? He's like, I can't help it. I'm a camp counselor.
I'm hurting you guys.
Yeah, but I was doing the head count.
You're like a human corgi.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have one extra kid, you know what I mean? Like, I guess that's better than. I have a story about leaders for you that involves music and biblical prophecies and mysterious deaths.
Whoa.
All right, have I got your attention now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a big fan of Jamaican music, in particular ska music and early reggae. If you listen to Jamaican music, in particular reggae, long enough, it will not be very long until you hear about, learn about, read about the Rastafari movement. Now, it's not a coincidence that Rastafari is so closely tied to music, because I think it's safe to say that probably the most famous member of the Rastafari movement ever is probably
Bob Marley.
Bob Marley, yes.
So, what is it?
I'm glad you asked. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, how would you describe the, if I said like someone's a Rasta, what does that mean to you?
I thought it was just a style.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I mean, and I did certainly, you know, before I learned about it, I thought it was more just a culture, a lifestyle. I mean, definitely most people, if you know about Rastafari movement, it's, you know, okay, well, it's associated with Jamaica. You know, I know that. The Rastafari movement is a religion. It is not just a lifestyle or a culture. It is a religion. Specifically, it's an Abrahamic religion, like Judaism, like Christianity, Islam, among others. Those are certainly the three largest ones, meaning that all of these religions can trace their origins and their belief systems back to Abraham. Bible, big A, Abraham. The other thing to point out very quickly here is people in the movement do not at all like the term Rastafarianism. You know, one of the main sort of undercurrents of Rastafari belief is they're against isms in particular. And you'll hear this in a lot of reggae music. They want to be sort of anti-dogmatic in that sense, that, you know, you're a Rasta, a Rastafari, the way it makes sense to you. We're not going to tell you this is the way to do it.
Got it.
So the Rastafari movement started in Jamaica, in the 1930s. And, you know, it largely had its roots in the Back to Africa movement.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you know anything about the Back to Africa movement of the 1920s and 30s, Marcus Garvey, probably the father of that movement, certainly identified as such. So Marcus Garvey, who was Jamaican, he was actually hugely influential in setting the course of Rastafari movement, or Rastafarians, if you will. They believe that their Messiah, okay, so the holy figure, the god of the Rastafari movement, is Haile Selassie. He was the emperor of Ethiopia from 1930 until he was overthrown in 1974. And his family and his lineage goes all the way back to Solomon. Okay. Solomon. Yes. So he claims to have been the last sort of in that direct descendant of rulers of Ethiopia. Now, Haile Selassie was his coronation name. Okay. So, you know, much the way that like when the Pope comes into office, it's not his given name. He'll take on a new name. Mm-hmm. The same was true for Haile Selassie. Now, his pre-coronation name and title was Rastafari Makonnen. Okay, so Raz in this case is like a title. And now I had mentioned Marcus Garvey earlier. So leading up to the birth of the Rastafari movement, Marcus Garvey was a big, big deal, very influential, especially among poor people and disenfranchised people in Jamaica, and really part of starting Pan-Africanism, the idea of our destiny is back in Africa. You know, we were scattered around the world through slavery and other means and really trying to get back there. And among people who are part of the Rastafari movement now, a lot of them will consider him a prophet. That Marcus Garvey wasn't just a charismatic man and a leader. He was a prophet. In 1927, Marcus Garvey is said to have said, "Look to Africa, for there a black king shall be crowned." And indeed, just 3 years later, Rastafari Makonnen was crowned emperor of Ethiopia. Now, in the eyes of many, many Jamaicans, this was a prophecy being fulfilled. This was the king of kings, emperor in Ethiopia. And not only that, but he was in many ways sort of the one legitimate king of Africa at that time. I mean, outside of Liberia, Ethiopia at the time was the only country in Africa free of colonial influence at that time. And he was, you know, considered a peer among the kings and queens around the world, the other royalty. So this was a big deal. And virtually overnight, the movement was booming. So, I mean, the name comes directly from his name. Rastafari Makonnen. We are the Rastafari movement. So this episode is about leaders, right? Now I want you just to think for a moment. Like, imagine you're Haile Selassie you've assumed the throne in Ethiopia, and someone comes to you and says, "All right, well, there's a nation thousands and thousands of miles away from here, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people there who believe you're the Messiah."
Yeah.
That's a lot to swallow, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we think we hear of, you know, messiahs and prophets, and we think it's hundreds and hundreds or thousands of years ago. This is like our modern era, you know, like my grandpa was alive at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to his credit, he was always very respectful in how he handled this.
Oh, was he going to shut them down?
No.
You could go a lot of different directions with this at that point. Yeah. So Haile Selassie, he was Christian. You know, he definitely understood all of his connections to the biblical world and the ancient world and
Solomon,
his connection potentially to prophecies. So he could have just come out and said, "No, you got the wrong guy. It's not me. That's, you got somebody else." But no, he didn't. I mean, he was very respectful. He understood that, wow, this is a nation. This is a big deal. And he was, in fact, very sympathetic to the idea of a Pan-Africanism movement. And he was, at least he said he was very sympathetic to the idea of repatriating blacks around the world back to Africa. You know, logistically, this could be a problem. In 1961, the Jamaican government, they sent a delegation of Rastafari and other, you know, leaders to come say, "Hey, can you kind of help us out? Are you on board with this?"
Yeah.
And to his credit, he said,
"Use your magic powers."
Right. That's right. You know, I mean, keep in mind, like, this is a man who, if you are a true adherent of Rastafari, this is God. Like, you're talking.
Yeah.
It's as if, like, a Christian went to have an audience with Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, I'm willing to help. I'm down with the cause, basically. So Jamaica got independence the following year, okay, in 1962. A few years later, in 1966, Haile Selassie went to Jamaica. Okay. So he flew there basically to, you know, hold court and talk to people. This day is considered the second holiest day in the Rastafari movement.
Wow.
I mean, the first holiest day would be his coronation.
Of course.
But they, in the Rastafari movement, you call that Groundation Day. Literally, the day that our Messiah came to our ground, touched ground in Jamaica. And here's where I think this is a deft act of logistical statesmanship. You know, he came to Jamaica, and his message was basically, "I believe in the Back to Africa movement. I am committed to helping you, but I think you need to focus on liberating your brothers and sisters in Jamaica first.
Mm.
And then we can focus on repatriation." You know, and that sort of became the goal of liberation before repatriation. Again, you know, keep in mind there are a lot of very poor people, a lot of, as I say, very disenfranchised people in Jamaica at the time who made up the early core of the Rastafari movement. That's where they sort of left it, is, okay, we're going to get our stuff in order, get all of our brothers and sisters lifted up, and then we will focus on getting back to Ethiopia. He was eventually, as I say, overthrown in 1974. He is said to have died in 1975, okay, sort of the ex-leader. Now, the official story is that he died from respiratory failure. There are a lot of people who believe he was killed for political reasons. You know, I say there was overthrow and...
Messiah has to... get killed, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. There are people in the Rastafari movement who doubt that he ever died at all.
Of course.
You know, certainly at the time. If he were still alive today, that would be quite an achievement. He would be well over 100 years old. But that was sort of how it ended with his time on Earth. And so to this day, the Rastafari movement, he is their Messiah. He is their divine being that was on the Earth with us for a very long time. Just the role of having leader thrust upon you, that's a lot to carry.
Yeah. Emperor in and of itself. Well, wow, geez, I'm emperor now. This is really crazy.
It's like, oh,
wait,
hey.
What's going on? Yeah.
This whole country thinks you're a deity almost.
That is the birth of the name and the man from which Rastafari movement takes its name.
I really thought it was just a way of life, like being chill.
Yeah.
And being cool to people.
I mean, and...
I guess that's related, like being cool to people.
It is related. You know, there are... I mean, every religion's a little bit different, but, you know, the focus in... It is on, like, that we're all united by the same life force. The golden rule, treat people the way you want to be treated.
You're describing Jedi, I think.
Yeah. the Jedi, however, do not have marijuana as a sacred herb as part of their practices. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. The use of marijuana, you might think, oh, sure, it's reggae music, it's, you know, party music. No, like, marijuana is a holy herb to people who follow Rastafarian. Yeah.
All right, and that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about leaders, Rastafarians, and one day I promise I will bring my dream quiz.
Yeah,
make it happen. You guys were there too. Like, you guys were all there.
Yeah. We enjoyed it.
You were there.
You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Audible. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.